Take two.
Okay.
So that was a tribute to Jeffrey Gaines.
All right.
And off your... Tell me about the CD that you...
Yeah, the tribute. It's a double CD because I just couldn't stop. You know, I just thought there's only all these people. So I paid... There's like one song per Beatle, you know, Lennon, McCartney, mm-hmm. you know. There's two Clapton tributes, one Cream Live, one Cream Studio, and it's a tribute to Steely Dan, Frank Zappa, mm-hmm. Carole King, Stevie Wonder, Burt Bacharach. I mean, Stevie Wonder and Burt Bacharach are actually the two songwriters that I really studied when I was a teenager, and that's right. What really taught me about how to actually construct a song. I mean, Robin Ford, I don't even know. There might even be a Joni Mitchell on there. There's a Crosby, Stills, or Nash & Young song. There's a Creedence Clearwater Revival. There's a Jimi Hendrix song I love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it almost sounds like a ripoff, actually, but, you know. Geez, I don't know. I probably named half of them, but
right.
It's just pretty much anybody that was really like. There's a tribute to Motown in general, so it's like Stevie Wonder and the Temptations because those are the two groups and people that would not have been Motown without Smokey Robinson. Just wouldn't have
sure.
been.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Berry Gordy. Berry was huge, but and then the Temps were just I don't know. It took them a while to gain traction, but. I just think they're like the greatest vocal group ever. They're just fantastic, you know. So the big influence on me.
So growing up in Long Island, What acts did you actually go to see? I picture you just listening to Billy Joel all day. That wasn't
No, I was never a Billy Joel fan.
In the 80s.
No, not that I have any objection to Billy Joel, but, I grew up around the block from him, but he's older than me, but, so we never met. But he went to my ex-wife's high school. But my first concert was Hot Tuna. I think I was probably 13 or 14. I was just not, I remember vividly when Woodstock happened, and I was probably, I guess I was 10. Mm-hmm. And my very, very conservative parents would, I didn't even think it was possible to ask, what do you think? No, don't ask a question like that. You're not going to go anywhere. Forget about it. So, and I was young anyway, but there's a lot of things I could have seen. But I think when I was 13 or 14, I got my own ticket to see Hot Tuna at Hillwood Commons at CW Post College in Westbury. And that was a great first show to see. But I live right near the Nassau Coliseum, so I saw Clapton, I don't know how many times, Santana, all kinds of. But I think I was probably 15 or 16 by the time I really started seeing shows with any kind of regularity. There was a Hofstra University was nearby. I saw a bunch of acts there.
So. I think, I grew up, the first kind of burst was the Southern Rock, Marshall Tucker, Leonard Skinner, Outlaws, that whole...
I was just about to say, speaking of Hofstra University, I remember seeing Charlie Daniels Band.
Yeah,
and they were, at that point, for a very brief period of time, they were like an imitation of the Allman Brothers, like instrumentally, like two drummers and two guitarists, but yeah, I saw Charlie Daniels Band. It took me years to see the Allman Brothers, that's one of my absolute favorite bands ever.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I moved to New Jersey that I saw the Allman Brothers. I missed more concerts than I saw. I mean, I had the opportunity to see Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath. I was really into Black Sabbath at a time. For a period of time, I kind of outgrew that. But so many shows that came to the Coliseum, and I was like right there in the plaza, seeing if I could cop a ticket. And right. Wasn't to be.
We saw Fleetwood Mac on Saturday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was very...
The actual Fleetwood Mac?
Actually,
who's
everybody but Lindsay?
I was gonna say it's not Lindsay anymore, but everybody really. When you say everybody, you mean the 1970s version of Fleetwood Mac,
Stevie Nicks, Nick Fleetwood. Help me out.
I mean, I know it was Peter Green wasn't there, right?
No,
or Kerwin, or
I think it was pretty much
John McVeigh, Christine McVeigh,
right?
Yeah,
Christine McVeigh, of course.
I love Christine McVeigh.
We were like 20th row, and Stevie Nicks was. Her voice was strong. It was solid. They weren't a nostalgia act. That's kind of...
Right.
As somebody said to me, if you go to see old bands, you see either it's the missing man formation, there's somebody missing, or they just have lost the edge. Mm-hmm. And the example always has been used to me is Springsteen is not a nostalgia act. He still has the energy and everything.
Right.
I'm not a big Bruce guy, but okay. But they were excellent. Good seats, and it was a really nice show.
It's a great show.
Now, where was this anyway?
AC.
Boardwalk Hall. AC.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't even know they were playing there.
Yeah, and they had Mike Carpenter from the Heartbreakers and
Neil Finn.
Really?
From Crowded Houses.
Crowded House song.
Yeah, they played Don't Stop. Dream or what
don't don't dream it's over.
Don't dream. Yeah, it was excellent.
We used to play that in a cover band I used to be in.
It was like a moment in the. In fact, they went from that to Landslide. It was beautiful. Uh-huh. It was really
cool.
And
a Tom Petty tribute.
And a Tom Petty tribute.
Well, that,
for whatever the heck was going on there.
Right.
But no, it was a great show. It was really really enjoyable. But it is true, like. My childhood dog was named Credence. I mean, when I was 16, and I've always been a big fan. Never saw him until last summer. It was a missing man formation, but they got some pretty energetic guys to fill in.
I'm assuming John Fogerty was not.
Not John, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And not the dead one and not the other one. But
Tom, I guess. Yeah.
But they got the, that was great. You find the right people to come up and fill it in. You can still be a nostalgia band.
Sure. Credence. I think my CSNY tribute was more Neil Young than anything. But I tried to get the vocals like them, but you can't do the Graham Nash, alto whatever range it is, unless you have that voice. But two of my favorite songwriters for their simplicity are Neil Young and John Fogerty. Not that there is anything similar about the two. But what amazes me about those guys, and there are a lot of songwriters like this. I mean, certainly Bob Dylan writes very, very simple music. I mean, mm-hmm. it's almost not music at all, you know. But what blows my mind, especially about John Fogerty, is that everything he writes is, I mean, it's like three or four chords, but it's just got this little hook that makes it happen. And it's, I mean, he's never written a bad song. It's always like really a vital song, like you want to listen to it over and over and over yeah. again. And there's an art to that. There's an art to making something that's really simple that's really going to, you know, catch on. And it's has like some
clean
to
and
it.
Catchy. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the secret is, honestly. And I deliberately tried to write a really simple song a la John Fogerty. And it's probably maybe even a little derivative, actually. I threw this little, I think it goes like this. I think it goes like. Something like that. I'm messing it up. But just this little guitar part that I thought, well, maybe that's the secret. You yeah. know? But I don't know what the. I don't know how these guys do it.
It was a great. If you're interested in Neil Young's roots, there's a documentary out on YouTube that I've mentioned before, but it's called Don't Be Denied.
Mm-hmm.
And I think. Anyone who admires him and also studies him as a songwriter would benefit from watching it. It really is. It's funny because it starts out with him as really young, like 12-year-old in mm-hmm. Calgary or wherever he grew up in Canada. And then it sort of talks about how he blew up all those Crosby, Stills, and Nash & Young tours, like quitting.
Oh, yeah.
He one was, show
he,
in.
And, right, you know, right. He was.
And being undependable, and they go and they interview. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and they're all like, what a jerk, you know. And then they circle back to him, and basically he does an interview that says, hey, look, if I don't want to get up and sing Our House at 8:45 on Saturday, I'm not going to do it. I'm successful enough. I don't have to do that.
Right, right.
I'm going to play what I want.
Yeah, and he can do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, so it was interesting. He's certainly an intriguing character.
Yeah. Hey, the miracle, I got to tell you about the miracle of you know, online, all kinds of stuff. You just posted a picture, I guess.
I just sent it to you. I didn't post it.
No. Oh, that was you.
That was his name.
Oh, I didn't read the name right. Okay, yes. All right, so anyway, I thought it was somebody else that I just met the other night. But I mean, anyway, a picture of what we're doing right now just showed up on my phone. So anyway. Okay.
It wasn't a miracle.
Yeah, well...
Let's see. We referenced before. We've got some CDs stacked in front of us. What would you like us to jump on here?
Let's see. I don't know. I'll tell you. One of my favorites is one called the Moon Always. I mean, what's the name of it? The Moon Always Finds Me. I think it's the name
you know,
of it.
The Moon is Broken Tonight.
No, that's a different one. You can play that, but that's not. Not my best, really, but...
Okay, you know what? Actually, let's jump out to a break here, and we'll figure it out, and be back in 60 seconds with Gary Ault. This is The Grapevine. We're here at 9 o'clock.
Hello, Centenary. My name is Gabrielle Lambie, and my Afternoon Sing It Loud show airs Fridays from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Afternoon Sing It Loud is a show where great music is played, interviews happen, and loads of fun takes place. There is a variety of music I use on my show, from pop to rock to country. It's all there. I love using the CDs from the music library and incorporating them in my show every week. Whenever I have a guest, we talk about a lot of different topics. Radio Rocks on WNCR, The Sound of Centenary.
The Trevor B. Power Show on WNTI.org, the internet voice of Centenary University, on Thursdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Playing the Allman Brothers Band, the Beatles, and the Rolling Stones, and all the players that influenced them. So if you want to hear some killer blues, soul, and rock and roll, the Trevor B. Power Show on WNTI.org, the sound of Centenary.
WNTI.org. That was The Moon Always Finds Me by Gary Ault. Our guest here in the studio, I'm Greg Jones, this is The Grapevine. We're here till 9 o'clock with Gary here, and he's been playing us his songs and also telling us some of the stories behind his recorded CDs that we're playing, that being one of them. So you were giving me an abbreviated version, but what's the story behind that song?
Oh, that was just one of those songs that somebody just used this expression. We were talking on the phone, and she was talking about her apartment being like way, I don't know, up in the sky, like the 18th floor or something. And she's, and you know, telling me about the amenities and this and that. And she says, but the moon is always there for me. And I thought that just sounded cool to say that. The moon is always there for me. Like, what does that mean? And then I looked up and I said, well, the same moon that she's talking about is shining on me. And we're 50 miles apart or whatever. But, you know, so I start, in my mind, I start thinking of a story. And I didn't like the way, even though it was a cool thing for her to say, I didn't think that would make a good song to say the moon is always there for me. I don't know, maybe it would, but I just, that's not what I wanted, where I wanted to go with it. So I just changed it to The Moon Always Finds Me.
Uh-huh.
And I made a story, you know. You know, maybe it's based on some people, but maybe not. I don't know. So I mean, some of my songs are intensely personal. It's all about what I'm going through or whatever. Mm-hmm. But just as often, they're just, it's just the sound of words that made me think of something. And that's
now,
one of them.
How many songs have you written and recorded?
Yeah, I don't really know. It's like, somewhere between 100 and 200. I haven't kept track, but I usually say hundreds, you know, because then it makes me sound like I might be Paul McCartney. Maybe I have 800 songs, you know. No, it's probably like 120, something like that.
Yeah, because like I said, your library here is impressive. And enjoyed listening through. The other day we played, Thursday, I played Valkyrie.
Valkyrie, right.
Yeah, which was interesting. It was a... I don't know how would you explain the genre of that?
I don't know. It's rock, obviously.
Yeah.
Maybe, I hate to categorize it like with a decade, but maybe 80s. Well, it's not, no, because 80s would be heavy metal. I don't know, really. I mean, I'll tell you with what happened with that one.
Like,
was
yes.
Huh?
Like, yes, maybe. I was trying to put it in a...
Yeah, but not... It's kind of simple in a way, because it's like a lot of it is hanging on one chord. And when I recorded it, I remember I didn't play any chords on it. All I did was play one note on a guitar, and I played another note on another guitar. And I probably put 11 guitar tracks on it, all one note.
Right.
It's just what I wanted to do. I don't know why, but and it's kind of simple in a way. And then I just came up with where I came up with the idea for the title was kind of, I guess, a multi-pronged thing. But at one of our band rehearsals, I started messing around with that Monkey song, Valerie. I don't forget who wrote that, but you know, the dum dum da da dum, you know, that one. And I was just trying to actually make it a rock kind, because we were a rock band. So,
oh right.
You know, I was trying to really make it heavy. So then I start to sing, I love her Valkyrie, you know, so I was messing around. So the next thing you know, I said, oh, you know what, maybe that'd be a cool song, Valkyrie, so.
All right, well, I actually dug it out here, so let's give it a
listen. Yeah, so listen for the one note per guitar thing.
WNTI.org. That song was Valkyrie by Gary Ault, who's sitting here in the studio. Told us a little bit about it beforehand, but you were saying that the intro to that was you felt was key to it.
Yeah, I didn't. You know, I was thinking a lot about the overall production. I was getting better at it and everything, and I thought, you know, how do you start this song? I got to do something unconventional. So I just wanted something kind of eerie sounding, you know. And I think the first thing I came up, well, I probably just did a bass thing, just like, you know, a constant ostinato thing. But I found this on YouTube. I think, if I remember right, the planet was Venus. It was the radio signals emitted by Venus. I mean, not that you're going to hear that if you're standing next to Venus, if that's possible. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's possible, but something like that. So I copped that off of Facebook, YouTube, rather. And then the she sells seashells thing, I don't know why that occurred to me, but another YouTube discovery is like some, you know, fifth grade class somewhere singing. I mean, I don't think there's a copyright issue with it, you know. Right. So there's a whole bunch of stuff, and then I put in the backward violins, and or was that on the first song? I forget. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. By the way, that was not me singing on that. Mm-hmm. That was a friend of mine named Jason Arvanitis, who has done singing on a lot of my songs.
Right.
Yeah, there's like a couple of albums where he probably did most of the songs. And we did an album together as well. That's not in your, I don't think it's in your compendium there, but so.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm distracted. I'm looking through your many CDs here.
Yeah.
It's hard to
yeah, there's at least know what to pick. Four more that aren't there that shouldn't be. That's the reason why they're not, but.
All right.
So, you know, that's why I say, depending on how you count them, it's 8 or 10. I'm not even sure, really. I did one years ago that it was actually a complete joke. I literally wrote the songs in 1 hour, mm-hmm. well, except for two that I had already written. I literally just started writing lyrics off of what, you know, because I was trying to make fun of a PBS show that I had just seen that I couldn't believe how stupid it was. It was some band, I can't remember the name of them. Nobody ever heard of them. And they were trying to make it sound like this is the important album of all time. Not Sgt. Pepper, it's this. And they're playing this, and it wasn't a comedy thing. It wasn't like satire. It was really like they want you to believe that this is genius because they said so.
Cocaine-fired narcissism.
Yeah, really. So I said, okay, that's where the music industry is, you know. So I'm just going to write the crappiest album possible. So I'm writing these songs like in an hour. I wrote lyrics to like 10 songs. Obviously, the words were horrible. And then I said, okay, this Saturday maybe I'll have time to record this. So then I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't write the song yet. I wrote the lyrics. I didn't even think about a melody or a chord. So I just started playing something. and before you know it, in by the end of the day, I had recorded a whole album. And it sucks. but I wanted it to suck. I mean, that was the whole point of it. I sold it for like $2 a copy, and I sold a bunch of copies. You know, not trying to trick anybody. I mean, it's only $2, you know. And I don't mention the name of it because there was a little blog going on some years ago about how awful it was, and they didn't understand that it was comedy.
It's sardonic, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't get it, and it made me look really, really bad. So I was like, you know what? I'm taking this off the market. It didn't even have my name on it, but somehow somebody figured it out, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, if you count that, there's 9 or 10. I don't know. But is that really a record? I mean, it took an hour and
it's like speed
and a day
dating, record production, speed dating.
So, but fun. I tell you, that's hard to do. It really is hard to play crappy. Mm. Like, I was deliberately trying to play wrong notes, and not just wrong notes, but that had a certain... Like, one of my favorite songs by Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, Canyons of Your Mind, has got what has been often called the worst guitar solo ever. But it's deliberately awful, and it's, like, genius. I mean, it's so bad that it's good, you know? Yeah. And it's really hard to do, because your tendency is to play right, you know, to play what's going on, you know? Somebody sneaking in.
Yeah.
Yeah, gremlin.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good buddy of mine, Jim. Hey, Jim. How are you?
Hey, Jim.
Gary Ault, Jim Horman.
Oh, Jim. Jim's here.
Okay, we can take a break. We'll be back here in 60 seconds with Gary Ault, and we're going to go 9 o'clock. Might even go a little bit after. We have, if you're tuning in for Rick for Randolph, he is at Suzanne Vega tonight, which he expressly asked me not to announce, but there it is.
Yeah. This is Rick from Randolph, host of the Local Artist Spotlight, heard every Saturday night from 9 p.m. to 11 on WNTI.org. I play songs by local artists, take listener requests, interview local artists who might perform their own songs and favorite covers, and sometimes I drift from my charter and play stuff just because it's stuff that I like to hear. We hope that you'll listen to the Local Artist Spotlight every Saturday night from 9 p.m. to 11. I'm Rick from Randolph, and this is WNTI.org, the sound of Centenary.
The Trevor B. Power Show on WNTI.org, the internet voice of Centenary University. On Thursdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Playing the Allman Brothers Band, the Beatles, and the Rolling Stones, and all the players that influenced them. So if you want to hear some killer blues, soul, and rock and roll, the Trevor B. Power Show on WNTI.org, the sound of Centenary.
This is KDO, host of KDO Radio. Tune in Mondays from 6 to 7 p.m. for a mix of alternative, including indie, ska, and punk. Never look down, never look down, never look down, So join me Mondays from 6 to 7 p.m. on WNCI.org, the internet voice of Centenary University.
Hi, this is Jolton Joe, host of the Eclectic Trainwreck. It's eclectic music from parts unknown. So join us for our musical adventure Sundays from 7 to 9 a.m. only on WNTI.org, the voice of Centenary College.
Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a robot, nor am I a secret government agent. At least I hope I'm not, but we will talk about what's going on in the world in the meantime. Hi, I'm your host, Talifa, the Mystery Man, here to bring a casual listening experience where I talk about whatever is under the sun, politics, comic books, music, sports, and many more, here on Fridays at 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. on WNTI.org, the sound of Centenary.
Hello, Centenary. My name is Gabrielle Lambie, and my Afternoon Sing It Loud show airs Fridays from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Afternoon Sing It Loud is a show where great music is played, interviews happen, and loads of fun takes place. There is a variety of music I use on my show, from pop to rock to country. It's all there. I love using the CDs from the music library and incorporating them in my show every week. Whenever I have a guest, we talk about a lot of different topics. Radio rocks on WNTI, the sound of Centenary.
Spinning on the ones and twos, it's DJ Dr. J.
Midnight to 3 a.m. on Sundays right here on WNTI.org.
Hey, Brian Kathan is here.
And Leon Passner. We're the hosts of Value This with Brian and Leon.
Your intergalactic source on public radio for everything about antiques and collectibles.
Absolutely, and we do it in a fun way that you'll enjoy.
Or at least we enjoy.
Yes, just think Abbott Costello.
Meet the Antiques Roadshow on the radio. So join us every week on Value This with Brian and Leon.
Saturday mornings at 8 and Sunday mornings at 9 on WNTI.org.
Curse or a blessing, the gift rejection, reflection of your heart.
WNTI.org. I'm Greg Jones. This, our show's The Grapevine. We're going to go overtime here with guest Gary Ault in the studio. That lovely song was Yorma, a tribute to Yorma, off Gary's Tributes album, which is available wherever fine CDs are sold. Specifically CD Baby is actually what the information we got before.
It's a level playing field now in a way because, you know, I never got my stuff into Tower Records, but it's always been available through anybody online, you know, Amazon, whoever, Barnes & Noble. Mm. So how is it any different than you know, Fleetwood, whoever, just whoever's making records, Ed Sheeran or something.
Yeah.
You know, they don't, I mean, there are stores, I guess, here and there, but it's not where people buy stuff. Right. So, you know.
They said the last Blockbuster closed a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Physical store to go buy stuff at, yeah.
I was surprised they were still open at all. I thought they went by the wayside like 10 years ago.
I think it was a straight real estate play at the end, and business-wise. So let's see. That was gorgeous. I really enjoyed the acoustical tribute there to Yorma. It really was beautiful.
And I'll just make a comment about the cover and the reason for the, you know, it's basically the creation painting by Michelangelo, the ones on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah.
Except that instead of Adam, it's a stick figure. So it's God creating a stick figure. So the reason for that is that, and this is a good example, that song that you just played, that's, I can't play like Yorma Kalkinen. I mean, there's just no way, you know. I mean, maybe if I practice for 20 years, you know. But so it's like he's one of my mentors in a way. Not that I've ever met him, but, you know, he's one of my big influences. But I'm a stick man compared to all the people on that album. I'm just doing my best, you know.
I mean, so what was the recording process of that?
That was actually before I was doing everything digitally. It was, I actually had a tape thing. And thanks. Okay, bye bye. Jim's leaving, so say goodnight, everybody.
Yeah, you want to restore it, tell you something.
Yeah, bye, Jim. Check back in with me, Jimmy.
So I was basically using it's kind of funny. It's a super VHS tape, so it looks like, if anybody remembers VHS tapes at all, it just looked like a regular VHS tape. It was a little different, but it was an 8-track digital recording.
Uh-huh.
And I did everything live. You know, I mean, you could do overdubs, but it was really, really, really awkward and difficult and laborious because I'm, like I said, I'm the engineer. I'm the guy that wrote the stuff. I'm the guy that's performing it one instrument at a time. And it's just, I'm so glad I finally got away from it. But that whole album was recorded that way and mixed that way, mixed with an actual mixing board where you're just, you know, I mean, if you can imagine this is like the old days, like 10 years ago, like the old days when Bing Crosby was still making records.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a performance in itself. You're playing it back and mixing it onto a tape or onto a CD. And that's the way I did it.
Right.
Which sounds normal 10, 20 years ago, but nowadays it's crazy, you know. So, I mean, you do it all electronically, I mean, you know, with software now.
So this was 2008, I believe?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so. I think it's a brilliant concept, to repeat what you said before, is you did a tribute album kind of in the style of artists that influenced you and that you admired. The songs I've listened to are really, it's a creative challenge, an aggressive creative challenge, I guess, to do that.
Yeah, I think the challenge, one of the biggest challenges is, like, I use the example of John Fogerty.
Mm-hmm.
How do I write a John Fogerty song without sounding derivative, like not without sounding, and I remember thinking, like, the introduction sounds like that song, I think it's called Hey Tonight, I don't know if I got it right, but I said, because it's basically Cartagena, so it's Hey Cartagena. I was like, oh geez, I can't say hey, so I got to say oh, or I don't know, whatever, but it's really hard not to, so I've got like a Steely Dan tribute, it sounds a lot like a Steely Dan song, but it's not the least bit derivative, but you know, there are a couple that, in fact, on the Jimi Hendrix song, which we're not going to play because it's like 12 minutes long, but it's very much like Machine Gun from the Band of Gypsies album, which is my favorite Hendrix by far.
Right.
And at the end, I said, huh, you know, what the hell? I just changed the bass line for the last 2 minutes to the exact bass line from Machine Gun.
Okay.
Because I said, you know, there's no fooling anybody. I'm just going to do it and play. So, anyway, that's my phone ringing.
Well, we'll queue up Cartagena here.
Oh, no.
Your tribute this, to Fogerty.
This is actually Jason's favorite song of mine because he loves singing it.
Okay. And the singer on this is Jason
Arvanitis, yeah.
Right. Okay. We'll give it a listen.
Yeah.
WNTI.org. That was Cartagena, a tribute.